For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
BetOnline remains your top spot for all your live betting action and contests. NFL, college football, UFC, and NHL are all in full swing. BetOnline is your number one source for wagering news, odds, trends, and predictions. With both desktop and mobile access at any time, head to the BetOnline today and use our promo code BLEAV for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts.
And welcome to another episode of the Tiger Miley Report podcast here at TigersMLReport.com. I'm Rahul Kasi. Alongside me is Chris Brown. And today, our guest is the editor-in-chief at Baseball America. He is now a two-time guest of the podcast, Mr. J.J. Cooper. And we're going to be discussing today the Baseball America's top 10 Tigers prospects. We're going to just talk all things Tigers. J.J., how's it going? And also, I just wanted to ask, because we had a fan of ours ask, How are you handling the Steelers season so far?
I'm good. Although when you bring that up, I'm not as good because, it's been a roller coaster. I mean, there have been times just like when it's been giddiness, which is like, this team's not very good. How is this team, 7-5 and 7-4? And then there are times where it's like, I know this team's not very good, but how do you lose back-to-back games to the Cardinals and Patriots? Like, I am in a glass cage of emotions, basically, when it comes to this, in that, like, but the reality of it is that it is life in the NFL without a quality quarterback. I'm old enough to have gone through basically two decades of that with the Steelers, in between Bradshaw and Roethlisberger, 2.5. And so, unfortunately, I've figured it out. And it's like, if it goes that way again, I hope I'm around for the next Steelers franchise quarterback. But I'm not complaining. Six Super Bowl wins. Like, I'm a UGA grad. I'm a Georgia. Like, I never imagined that University of Georgia would win one more national title, much less back to back. I'm not even upset that they're not even in the playoffs. Like, oh, yeah, okay. But yes, right now I'm tired because we have the handbook that we send to the press every year right before Christmas, and I wrote 20 Tigers prospects in the last day. I just filed the Tigers list, and well, really 30, because 20 full reports, and then 31 through 40. And I need to do the Twins of that today and into tomorrow morning. And then I need to do the Rays version of that tomorrow afternoon and Friday morning. And I need to do the Reds version of that Saturday and Sunday. And then we'll have 3 days before we send the book. So, yeah, that was a long answer, but I'm doing well. How about you guys?
Doing well. Was to say, Chris and I have been working on our top 30 and just kind of finishing that up a little bit. And I'm working currently right now on a report on Andrew Magno, who had a really good end of the year in Erie. And Chris just did a report on Briseño, who we talked to Jeff Pontus before about Briseño, how there was a couple of perceptions of him down in Florida where they're not really sure about him, but it seems like in terms of where they even classify him as a catcher, Ryan Garko said that he will be sticking at catcher. I beg to differ, but I mean, it's development.
You never know with a guy that young. I would say the thing I would say about it is like, if we want to argue that he's not going to be that the 6'4" guy with long limbs is not going to eventually be a catcher, that seems perfectly reasonable. But at the same time, I also follow the logic of saying, if he wants to do it, there are definitely examples of players who've been worse than he is right now defensively, who have more to work on, who have gotten to that point. So, I'm fresh off of us writing up Briseño myself, and clearly he is a this is the thing. I'm not trying to take over y'all's podcast, but the thing that does stand out to me about this, you guys are working on, you know, y'all's list as well. I feel like that there is a very distinctive difference when I'm doing the Tigers list this year than it was a few years ago. And I'm sure we could say that about a lot of lists at a lot of times, but I mean that in a positive way, in that it's a different kind. Like, a lot of the prospects I'm writing up now are different kinds of prospects than they've been in past years. And I think that this, these are a group of players who probably, because of the, because they all can hit, as the kind of the baseline that they're looking for is players who can hit. That's a good starting point, as opposed to this guy is a really good athlete. He can do this and this and this. We'll see if he can hit, which is, I think y'all probably have two. I've written up too many Tigers prospects over the years who could fit that description. And I think that this is a very positive sign for the Tigers, you know, where they are in 20 going into 2024.
You know, it's ironic that we were just talking about that on the other podcast yesterday, that and we're talking about Cole Keith, that usually in the past Tiger prospects would have, it was like almost like a butt. For example, like we think of, I can think of Steven Moya, who could hit for power, but couldn't hit for average, struck out too much, and he was a terrible outfielder. I mean, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm not using the term, but
go ahead. Ended up being it's the Cale Org, right? The boy, this guy can do just about everything except hit.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll figure out hitting.
Age Workman.
Yeah.
Nick Quintana.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
you can keep listing, you know, like, I'm not trying to pick on these guys, but like, there's been a lot of these, they do this, 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 and this. And if they can hit, that will get them to a big league career.
And to be fair, that's kind of how we felt about Parker Meadows for the first 2-3 years of his career. Mm-hmm. He was really stagnating, and then something seemed to click, you know, he's still not you're not going to win a batting title there, but that's a guy that turned into a viable hitter and, at least enough so far to get a glimpse of what he might be able to do in the big league. So that was occasionally it does work out. But yes, you're right. I think for many years, they were just kind of hoping players would work out. And I think you mentioned this in your chat at Baseball America, that they really are seeming to target guys who just hit and they'll figure out everything else later.
And if you said, okay, well, give me an example of an organization who has done this well, I'm not talking about the current version, but the team that always jumps out to me is what the Cardinals did, I would say 10 to 15 years ago, when really to go back to when Jeff Lunau was kind of running Cardinals drafts year after year. And again, it went on a little bit after he left too, but year after year, they would draft hitters and almost every, you know, those had a butt, and some of these Tigers prospects were talking about there's a butt, but the butt now is, and the Cardinals prospects, it would be Alan Craig. It would be Paul DeJong. It would be Harrison Bader. It would be guys where you say they can hit, but the question is, where are they going to play defensively? Now, this is hard, but what the Cardinals were really good at is we'll make Matt Carpenter into a playable infielder. We'll make Paul DeJong into a shortstop, even though he didn't really play shortstop at Illinois State. We'll make Alan Craig playable at positions where up higher up the defensive spectrum. Harrison Bader is a center fielder who ends up being a really good one, not a corner outfielder who is stuck over there. They did that over and over. That's where we are now with the Tigers, which is, you know, again, like if we talk about, say, like a Colt Keith, if you want to kind of question him, the easy question is, where's Colt Keith going to play? Where is Max Anderson going to play? Where is Jace Young going to play? Where is Justin Henry Molloy going to play? These are all legitimate questions. However, they all come, they're kind of like the butt in the sentence has changed, because now it's like this guy can really hit, but they have to figure out where he's going to play. But the most important thing to do in baseball is to be able to hit, and you then can figure out like the other parts of it, and you can improve a lot of those other parts, I think.
Yeah. I mean, we're looking at somebody that with Cole Keith, who's hitting for average and power and in for average. And I was thinking, I went back the archives a little bit, but the last time I can remember a Tigers hitter hitting at all levels like this was Frank Caneliano when he was before he got traded to Texas, because he was hitting at 200. He was hitting 300. He wasn't hitting with much power, but he was hitting everywhere along with Gabe Kapler. But then, I mean, Curtis Granderson was he had a butt to him. He was hitting too, but he also had a butt to him. Mike Gerber also comes to mind for whatever reason. It's just because it's a flashback.
Scott Sizemore.
Yeah. And that Scott Sizemore. That's another one too. And, go ahead.
And we're talking like, I mean, you are listing off players who had careers, but those careers have been like, this has been the overarching thing that stands out. And the butt of the Tigers organization, I feel like in the 21st century has been, not that they haven't produced, I mean, I don't want to make it sound like they've never produced a position player or anything like that, but the butt is they have really struggled to produce. Writing for the overview of our Tigers, you know, intro for the section, it's like, you have to go way too far back right now to say, not even who's the last homegrown, like middle of the order bat. Take that out of it for a minute, right? And I'm saying, when I say middle of the order bat, I'm saying, let's just set the bar, say, statistically, let's say 30 OPS plus, right? That's not a crazy number. I mean, that's a really good season, not average, but I'm saying a season like this, right? And when I'm going back on, it's like, okay, so no one last year. Okay, no one the year before that. Okay, no one the year before that. And before long, you're back at JD Martinez the year before he got the year before, I guess, that he got dumped for one of the trades that was utterly, like, I remember where I was. I was at a swim meet at the time with my kids. And I'm like, I get a text. It's like, you hear about this trade? And I'm like, okay. And then I hear like, so what did they get? And it's like, Jose King, you know, like I'm going through this.
Well,
like,
Lugo.
Where's the other player in this? And it's like, well, I guess DHs don't have a whole lot of value. And it's like, well, DHs who bat cleanup or three hole going to have some value. But like you go back to that and Castellanos, and that's the last time I would say that the Tigers have truly had someone who should bat three, you know, third in a lineup, right? Now, you hope that a Torkelson, you hope that a Riley Green, you hope that a Colt Keith, that someone gets to that point. But that's a long time ago to not have even like a weird fluky season where someone is like, wow. I mean, yeah, okay, it was a level beyond their normal level. But remember that year that so-and-so just basically was a star? That's been the problem to me for the Tigers for longer than ideal, is that, you know, like basically going back to JD Martinez, going back to early Tigers career, Miguel Cabrera, going back to guys like that, it just hasn't been enough bats in the lineup as I see it. You guys watch it way more than me. Does that like batch what you guys see?
I was going to say, we had a tweet last year or a tweet this year where we were talking about the number of 20 home run hitters. And I had to go, like Chris went back. We both went back quite a bit to find the most at one time, because there wasn't a journeyman. So we're not talking like, what was that one guy, Chris,
in the minors or
yeah, in the minors, was it?
Oh, so was it, in the minors, you'd have like Danny Dorn.
Yeah.
And
that's I wrote like, him up for the Reds one year. I remember
Mike Hessman, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was, there was just no offense throughout the system, but you're right, JJ. Like it's been 7-8 years since they've had, I mean, like the best offensive season in the last 5-6 seasons might be Robbie Grossman's 2021, I think it was, or maybe 2022. They just haven't had any offense. They gave so many at bats to guys like Harold Castro and Victor Reyes and Ronnie Rodriguez and Jacoby Jones and just a lot of these guys that just couldn't perform offensively. And so it is nice. You get the feel, and I think you said it. You got it from looking at the list that there may be some hitters on the way finally, which is a nice break from what it used to be, which was just, you know, SEC arms.
I look at it right now, and like, there's a scenario I could map out where the Tigers will have, and again, this is their position, it feels like, of depth, but the let's just say for a moment that Colt Keith by May is the Tigers' second baseman, right? Asking a lot defensively more than his offense, but let's just say if that's the case, I could map out, if everyone's healthy, a very plausible scenario where the Tigers have a second baseman, maybe in many cases with some questions about the glove, but a second baseman at the majors. So let's say he's at the majors. Let's say that Jace Young is in AAA, you know, okay. Like, again, I don't know, he's going to play second and third, and they've also got to figure out a third baseman. So I'm not, but like, you could map them all the way down the line to low A, and, you know, really, you could probably even go to the complex league where it's like, that's a plausible hitter who's playing in at a middle infield position. Now, some of them may end up playing, you know, I think McGonagall probably at the end of the day is probably a better second baseman than short. I think he's going to play a lot of short right now in this organization because, you know, they're, hey, we got a lot of guys who can play on that side of the, you know, of second base. You can play over here. Let's keep you over here. Hey, Carson Rucker, you're on the left side. You're not on the right side, you know, because of that, things like that. But that's just the difference of like between that of or me, you know, me talking to you guys a few years ago. And the current version of that would be trying to explain like, well, I know Christian Santana hit a .005 in April, and then his batting average dipped in May because he hit, I think, .065 in May. But now let's explain why, you know, like, he's kind of interesting.
Well, that's, yeah, that's a guy we've talked about his swing path before, where I think I think he had a month where his BABIP was zero because he had three hits and they were all home run. yeah, there's something they need to work on there, but he did have like, you know, I don't know if it was August or July or whatever.
He did have a good month there. Yeah, there was a good month there, but yeah. But again, like, he's now like a, if this guy turns out, that'd be great, rather than this is one of the better prospects in the system. That's the difference.
Yeah, I think we even had him. We may have had him as a top 10 prospect in the system heading into last year. And then it was like, well, like, but, you know, that's the way that the nature of this aspect game, right? Where, you know, you have hope for these guys and then things just don't quite work out. And other times, you know, we came in, I don't think anybody came into the year with Justice Bigby being on any prospect list. And then he went out and hit 360, 350, 340. You're like, well, all right, I guess I have to pay attention to this guy now.
And it was to the point too, where, and this is something that Gabe Alvarez told me when he was out there, when he got called up to Toledo, that his presence not being in the Erie's lineup alone, that was going to probably cost them perhaps in the playoffs. That ended up not being the case. But JJ, that question,
they ended up okay.
Yeah, they ended up doing all right because they went all defensive and they got some really good pitching too, which we'll get to in a second. But
I was going
to
say Herger basically was, you know what, 13 scoreless in the postseason.
Yeah. Yeah, between him and Madden, who I know, one of the things about Madden is location of his fastball on the lefties, and he did that against the Binghamton lineup that was stacked. I mean, this is a team that got really good right after the trade deadline. But with Bigby, it seems like the follow the same case with like Kerry Carpenter, where he fine-tuned it a little bit with somebody else and worked on it with the organization. And it seems like he's a good example of, and we'll talk about the pitchers here in a second, is the organization giving him instructions and him following it, whereas in the past, that was not the case.
You mentioned Ryan Garko's name before. I mean, we could mention Ryan Garko. We could mention Scott Harris. We could mention, you know, Mark Connor, Rob Metzler. There's a lot of people we could mention. But the thing that does stand out with this is like, when you say like, well, why is it different? It's like, because it's a different organization. I mean, that's just the way not that everyone's different or anything like that, but there has been a pretty significant change at the top and then at the middle, which then affects, you know, that filters all the way down. And the thing with all of this is like Bigby's example, like that, that's like the overriding question. I think I'm sure you guys get it too. Like, is Justice Bigby the next Kerry Carpenter, right? That's the, if I'm a prospect fan, if I'm a Tigers prospect fan, that's the perfect, like, hey, I'm going to sum it up nice and sweet and try to put it together. Right. And I mean, I would say right now, I mean, if you guys know for sure, then you guys are better than I am at this. Cause like, I'm like, here's why I have concerns that he's not going to be that, but that puts it like, I would say it's lower down on the probability scale, partly because I do think it's always like it. Bigby being a right-handed hitter just makes it a little tougher. I think right away, you know, right there. The one thing I want to just see with Bigby a little bit more is like his oppo power is really impressive. But that also sometimes leads me, okay, every now and then like I'm just worried as he's more and more the book at the upper levels is, okay, what can he do on a good fastball in? Because I have yet to see a lot so far. And I tried to watch, he's one of the guys I tried to really like bear down on. And I've yet to see him, like, I know, like I went through and watched every homer he hit last year that was on TV, which I think it was all of them actually, that was on MLB TV. And like, you know, the vast majority of them are to right and right center. They did some to left, but when he hit him to left, it was because someone hung a breaking ball, things like that. Like, there's some still, like, I want to see, you know, okay, can he do this next? That said, to what you said, like, it's something where the fact that he's here now already shows, both on his part, he's been able to take constructive, you can call it criticism or, like, coaching points, enact them, because, like, coming out of Western Carolina, he did not have that oppo power. It was going to be much more likely that he was going to hit a ground ball through the, you know, through the hole there. That tells you something right there, where it's like, I do not in any way say like, oh, he's not going to get to this point, because he's already shown he can get like from where he started as a 19th round pick to here is a really long journey that required a whole lot of work. And he's shown I'm willing to do the work. I'm able to do the work. I'm able to process this. So now if we say, okay, there's still this, and this that need to happen to get you from here to a big league regular role, it'd be crazy to say, oh, there's no chance he can do that, because the path he's already taken is harder than the one he's done so far. And, you know, the one he has still to go in some ways, I would say.
Yeah, Bigby just, he's a fascinating, and you mentioned it, it's so odd because you see a lot of players struggle to go opposite field with power or go opposite field at all. You know, you see a lot of guys who are heavy pull hitters, and it just seems really rare to see the other way, or at least guys who can hit the opposite field with power. And basically, like, I was digging down to see who hit balls like this, and it's like a handful of guys. And then a couple of them, but it's like DJ LeMahieu and Bo Bichette. You're like, well, I mean, if he turns out like that, that'd be fantastic, but it's tough.
You know who the guy who jumps out to me right away? It's Jace Young's brother. Josh Young, when he was at Texas Tech, I think that you could have put $1 million check poolside and said, in BP, if you can hit that, if you can hit within 50 feet of it, $1 million is yours. And it had been like, you could have just torn up the check afterwards. Like, he was, I'm going to go opposite power alley over and over and over. And that's where he hit. And when he came to the Rangers, basically he and they knew, it's like, okay, that is an advanced way to hit, but you as a major league hitter, you're going to have more in the toolbox than that. And to his credit and their credit, he did get there. And again, that's like one of the things I like when you bring that up, it's like, that was a useful example to me of, oh, you can absolutely get there, because he is a perfect example of someone who got there. And if like, I got to see him, I watched a good bit of him when he was in college, and it just stood out, like, you know, and again, I would prefer that. Like, if you could take what Justice Bigby is doing and sprinkle a little bit on, say, like an Isaac Pacheco, it would probably really help an Isaac Pacheco, who right now it's like that field, and especially like pitch me away, I'm probably not going to have a whole lot of ability to do much with it.
except Lansing. For whatever reason, every time we saw him in Lansing, he would Jackson Field. I don't know what it is about that field, but every time we saw Pacheco play, we saw him live, I think, what, 3 or 4 times last year, all in Lansing, because Chris lives closer to Lansing. And it was just mind-boggling what he did. And defensively, I think he still grades out pretty well. I think he's come a long way since last year, when originally they had him starting at shortstop. And I remember the first game where Jackson Jobe started for Lakeland, and he was it 2 errors, Chris? What was it, like something like that?
Yes. And, yeah, I remember that too.
And it was, and then it was funny because Jackson Jobe, it looked like he got angry after that and then just like let loose. And I'm like, well, okay, that's what I'd like to see. Because and that was when Jobe was still, I mean, there's another guy who's taken some pretty severe strides. I mean, in the last 2 seasons, I mean, he was still a thrower there in Lakeland, and last year he was carving guys up with 4 different pitches.
He is a very, I mean, you guys saw it, you know, probably more than I did. Like, talk about a guy who's a legit pitcher at that age. Like, there are still times to me where he can almost, it's probably going to help him long term, but he can get a little too cute to me, right? Like there are times where I feel like that he's giving up contact. He's giving up even hits, where it's like, dude, that guy, you already had gotten him to like strike 1, strike 2, where the guy looked completely hopeless. And you like, you made it a little easier for him with your pitch selection. Right. But that said, it's because he's got multiple ways to attack hitters. He's got multiple pitches that are plus. He's got the ability to locate him. Like, that's the other thing. You know, we talked about the hitters, and like the thing that also does stand out about me with how, what, you know, you one of the advantages I love about getting to do, like, I'm working on 4 teams right now, right? Like, you see how different organizations approach things, right? And you see over the years, I want to count up, like, I've probably written, you know, I've been at BA for 21 years now. So I've probably written up, at least done each organization, 2/3 of all organizations, I've done their top 30 at some point, right? And different ones have very different ways of doing it. And sometimes what they had one time is very different. Like you said, it used to be like, you could just count off as like, who are we going to mock to the Tigers? Like, what's the best SEC pitchers on the board? You know, like that kind of thing. The thing that stands out with the Tigers right now, I would say, though, is there is a very clear emphasis with the starters of having ways to attack righties and ways to attack lefties. And like, it feels like I almost never write up a Tigers starting pitching prospect where you're not saying he throws a fastball, he throws a curveball, he throws a slider, he throws a changeup. And you may even have like, he throws a cutter, or it is something where there's not such a thing really as, like, I think Keeter Montero may end up in the pen, but that dude's got 4 pitches. You know, like, there's not really, I struggle to come up. Tyler Madsen's a reliever, a pure reliever, and, you know, he's not a 2-pitch guy, right? Like, so there's definitely been an emphasis on, and I think it's been good for Jobe. Like, I mean, I think Jobe basically has 5 now, really, on some nights, you know, like, because now that he's added that, you know, like, it's, if you count, like, especially if you count 4s and 2, you know, 4 seamers and 2, you're like, there's a lot of guys who have a lot of different ways to attack hitters. They may be able to attack a hitter in the first inning one way, and then that guy, same guy, comes up in the third. It's like, no, you're not going to see the same thing from me because I have different plans of attack, which I think has also been, a clear point of emphasis of the organization.
You're absolutely right. And this is something that, we, in talking to Brent Hurdler, we talked to Sawyer Gibson Long, we talked to several pitchers this year, and they all have one thing in common. They were told at the beginning of the year to learn a new pitch or learn a pitch they threw before. And for example, in the case of Gibson Long, he hadn't thrown changeup since, I think it was high school, Chris. I can't remember if it was college or when he told us, but he learned an old pitch, put that so he can, and he told us, he explained why. Because the organization told him he was having a hard time attack with his fastball. I don't think it was against lefties. Yeah. Attacking with his fastball because he didn't have enough zip on it. So he got this changeup going. And between that and the cutter he's throwing, it's just, there was a significant difference. His K per nine as a result went up over two. I mean, that's unheard of to me. It seems like it's an unheard of thing. But also, when talking to Lyle Lockhart, for example, here's a guy, you look at his numbers in Tulsa, and of course, I know the Southern League has its nuances, and you always have to kind of take that aside. But he, if you look at his numbers on paper, you're like, wow, why did the Tigers go after this guy? Then he tells us that he learned a split finger, and as a result, it made him a completely weaponized pitcher in Erie. And there were so many examples of that this year, with the exception of Flores, but that's another story from their day, that the org just seemed like to have a really good impression on saying, hey, this is why we're telling you to do this, and here's the result. And the pitchers are seeing that.
Sorry, I didn't know. It looked like Chris had something to say, so I was going to let Chris go first.
They tried. We that was one of the focuses with Flores heading into the year, was to get him to throw more changeup. It just didn't seem like it took. And then the velocity was down a little bit, which was kind of a bummer. But right. I think
the stuff with everybody is probably the biggest. You know, I think that's the biggest question of Flores. But this is, you know, to me, they're not all going to be starters, right? But that's okay, because it's much better to then winnow down at some point if you have to, because you also don't know, there's not really any Astros Tigers kind of overlap here, but this is struck me about, this is something that the Astros did a lot of when they were kind of producing that whole wave of pitchers who's all in the big leagues now, Javier and, you know, Framber Valdez, and we could go down the list and all, but their idea at that time very much, I felt like, was this, like, okay, you had a special.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
Four seam, but you had a four seam fastball and a slider, which was your weapons against same side hitters. But the curveball was there because, I mean, if you think about it, right, it makes more sense. Like, if you're a right hander, a slider against a lefty, unless you have a pure, you know, filth dragon of a slider, you're doing, it's not nearly as nasty if it's like, oh, cool, I'm a lefty, that's coming in on me, I'm going to drop the bat head, here we go. But if you say, okay, a curve, especially a 12 to 6, a more of a 12 to 6, an 11 to 5, a 1 to 7, whatever, you know, that has a lot less of a platoon component to it. And then, especially if you can also throw a change, okay, so especially if you can then go right with that change a little bit as well. But like, I've got the fastball slider that gives me up and kind of away from same side hitters. And maybe I mix a changeup in every now and then, or a cutter or something to kind of, okay, so the slider goes away, the cutter comes in. Now I flip it over, I'm a right-hander, I'm facing a left-handed hitter. And now it's like, okay, the four-seamer is still good, because the four-seamer is, you know, the run of it, you know, it's not gonna have a whole lot of run. The two seam will be more run. The run of it's not gonna be that big of a deal. But, you know, if you can get that carry,
right,
that's universal effectively. But having that curve that's more 12 to 6, more up and down to be kind of to go with it, then to have a change that I can go away. Well, if I'm a hitter, I can't say all I'm gonna look at is here. I can't say I'm ahead in a count, now I could really do damage, because I know that they're probably going to, at minimum, I can look, let's say I'm on fastball, but I can also look in an area, right? Well, that's when you can do the most damage. But the Tigers now have more pitchers, I feel like, who in those situations can sometimes stay a step ahead. Because, like, again, like, I was just watching a lot of video of Tyler Madison, you know, writing him up. And like, that curveball, I don't think it's, like, if you asked me to describe it, the characteristics of it, I would not describe as, like, classically excellent, right? Like, it's 80, 81, big loop, you know, a little bit bigger break than you kind of want to see. And you'd be like, okay, so if you just took that pitch in its, you know, raw form by itself, I'd be like, yeah, you know, whatever. But the way he uses it with that 97 mile an hour, I can basically go above your hands. Then I can go at the top of the zone. And if I get you two strikes, I can then go, you know, over your head and you probably swing at it and sit down. The ability to have, like, I come to the plate as a hitter and I'm sitting here going, here comes heat, here comes heat. And it just seemed like a lot of times the way Madison would use that, like where he'd like loop it in there, he'd drop it in there and you're looking for 98. And all of a sudden here's this 81. And it's like the brain just freezes. It's like you're seeing more of this where it's like, oh, I see how these are interacting well. You know, you're seeing how guys who are tunneling well with, okay, the fastball and the slider, the, you know, seem to be working well together. You know, if, you know, some of these guys, like, there just seems like, again, there's, you see a lot of cohesiveness to it.
There's a lot of these guys who the pieces are starting to fit together more. And that was just one of the things we noticed just throughout the season is guys continuing to improve. We saw Troy Melton half dozen times, I think, over the course of the season. And, you know, his season ended a little bit early, but that was a guy who was basically, you know, just arm strength, I think, coming out of college. You know, he had changed his delivery, I think, as a junior or senior. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, you see him, and I don't know if we ever saw like a consistent plus secondary from him, but all three of his
flashes.
They would flash, and everything else was there. He's a big, strong kid. He throws a lot of strikes. The velocity's there, and it's like, well, this is something that, you know, there's something to deal with here, work with here. And I do think, you know, not to give away your list or whatever, but I think it was kind of fun to having him penciled in as the closer, the future closer. I was like, that's kind of fun.
Which again, like I will say, like nothing causes more, like,
I know you're going with this.
More angst. Like, we've tried to kill that. I've tried to kill that like five times, I feel like. And you say, well, why do you want to kill it? And it's like, because it's an utterly absurd exercise in some ways, right? Like, I did the Twins list this week, also came out. And like, seems like, do you think Walker Jenkins, you put him in center field on your 2027 lineup? So I take it that you think Walker Jenkins is a center fielder, not a right fielder. And it's like, no, not really, but you got to make these work, right? Like, you're not signing free agents. You're not keeping guys in who are going to be, you know, free agents after the 2025 season. And I'd rather put good players in positions than not. And it's like with Melton, it's like, if you ask me right now, if there's a Tigers closer who's in the minors right now, it wouldn't be Melton, right? It would be Madison or Montero, right? Like,
yeah. Or Pacheco. Again, I mean, Madison, or Pacheco too, depending if, you know.
Or Pacheco.
Yeah.
You know, it would be, those are the guys. But at the same time, like, we have them ranked 1 through 10, and it's like, could this guy do it? Yeah, you know, maybe, you know, like, and so, okay, we're going to slot him there. Like the same way where it's like, okay, you look at the, like that Tigers, you know, projected lineup, and you're like, how do I do the infield? And it's like, I promise you the 2027 infield will not look at that. But then I'll look at it, it's like, this is also a way to try to kill it. It's like, well, I was doing the Rays one, and right, and someone asked me about that. I'm like, guys, this is the Rays 2027 lineup. If you want to talk about an impossible exercise, I said, I've been doing this for a while. Let me just take an example of the 2023 lineup that I did in, I guess that would have been 2019. And I'm like, looking back at this, the actual Rays 2023 lineup, I believe like four of those players were in the organization in 2019, because it's like, it's the Rays. So it's like, you didn't have Randy Rosarena penciled in, you know, in the outfield. It's like, right, because he was a Cardinal. You didn't have Jose Siri penciled in. Yep, Astro. You didn't have this guy. It's like, nope, because it's like, it's the Rays. They do volume of trades. And so, you know, whoever you have now is probably not going to be there in 4 years. And so that's, you know, but again, but that with all of this, there are now, like, so that's one question I wanted to ask you guys also again, which is, it's like, here we are. We don't know. There's a lot more off season to go. But the thing that strikes me is if the Tigers were in, say, like the AL East, I would look at this right now and go, doom. Like, yeah. How are you going to be better than the Orioles? How are you going to be better than the Yankees? How are you going to be better than the Red Sox? How are you, AL Central? Like, okay, so the Twins were the best team in the division, but they've already announced publicly their payroll's going down. They've already lost Sonny Gray. You guys, the Tigers signed Kenta Maeda. I'm not saying like they'll probably be the favorite, but the Guardians look like that they're as much trying to, keep payroll where it was last year. They're not looking to add. The Royals are looking to add payroll, but they're starting at a very deep hole. The White Sox, we don't know yet, but there's been a lot of rumblings of them trading Cease, of them maybe trading other players. Like, what is a realistic, like, again, rose colored, but what's kind of the hope you guys have for 2024?
I'll let you go first, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's one of those things where it feels like had the offensive free agent market been better, that the Tigers could have, it could be striking right now. But it feels like the options at second base and third base, where their big glaring holes are just as easily filled from within. You might get the same level of production. But I think optimistic Tigers fans are thinking, somewhere around 500, and if they are looking like that or trending slightly above that, then maybe they can make some trades at the deadline and go out and win the division, because
does 84 win it this year?
Yeah, I could see 84 to 86 winning the division for sure, because as you said, there's not a whole lot of there's talent, right? But there's no juggernauts by any means.
Yeah, especially when you look at Chicago's situation too. Chicago is rebuilding their farm system a little bit. It's a system that they were able to get some pitching back in the trades last year. But as far as I'm concerned with the Tigers, this is the first time, as much as I've been paying attention in the minors since the days of Greg Gore and all those guys. This is the first time I can see actual contribution to a team that will go over 500. I really believe that, because we have to take away Sir Gibson's long performance in September, because September performances can be deceiving. But you saw some signs from Parker Meadows towards the end of the year. They're getting contribution. And I think if the Tigers can get at least some they haven't had a two-war player that has brought up for the minors outside of Riley Green in terms of like a lower round presence in almost 20 plus years. So to me, I think I see somebody like Cole Keefe coming in and challenging for the second base position. And I look at that better comparatively speaking to Kansas City and Cleveland. It's like there's like tumbleweeds there when it comes to that. And I think that the Tigers have, for the first time, have some players that can be impactful and help them get to 500. I think the race to 500, and the way they built this with Scott Harris and AJ Hinch, all follows the philosophy of players that can do multiple positions. Look at Eddie's Leonard, who is an intriguing prospect. He's in a sense like, yes, Brandon, he might not be a long-term shortstop, and I reading up the scouting
report. I would say not a long-term shortstop.
Yeah, no. Yeah, and it was funny because when we saw him in Toledo, he wasn't bad, but then I can understand. But then there was a couple times where I was watching on the road in Columbus, you're like, oh, okay, I see what's going on now. But those are at least intriguing enough. It's not org fodder. And I think that is the biggest difference for the Tigers, comparatively speaking, to teams like the Royals and Cleveland. Cleveland last year got Gavin Williams, and they got some really good production. And I mean, I remember him starting against Erie, and he just put the hammer out. Like the first start of the year, just with the weather the way it was. You remember JJ. He looked like a starter right then and there that should have been in Cleveland day one. Yeah. I think the Tigers, with the progress of guys like Montero and Gibson Long and even Reese Olson. Remember, the thing about Reese Olson was his numbers in Toledo were not that good, but the Tigers were able to go, hey, look, look beyond that and see what else he can do. And as a result, his spin rate and just using – it wasn't just a spin rate thing. It was his way to command that and make him an effective pitcher. I can trust the Tigers to do that more now than I ever had before in my entire lifetime. And I think that will help based off the profiling, based off what Garko's done in the minors with the development team. And Gabe, a lot of credit goes to Gabe Rivas too. They're identifying these, like, again, getting stuff like from Lyle Lockhart, players that off the scrap heap a little bit. We're seeing the Tigers actually improve players for the first time. That's never been, it's never been the case as far as I can go back and remember.
I don't mean to change the subject here, but there was something that it's been on my mind, and I wanted to ask JJ before we let you go. We don't want to take you too long. But, it's a more overarching thing, and it's something that has happened since the last time we talked to you, and that is the PPI picks now is a thing. And you know, there are some Tigers fans who are hoping that Parker Meadows would sneak back into like the top 100, so maybe he have a chance. But Cole Keith might. But I'm just curious from your perspective,
Cole Keith will be in the 100. You know, I can promise you that. So that.
Baseball America has always been kind of the standard for these sorts of things, but now. Well, the rankings have like real world implications, which I don't think was ever really the case. And I'm curious if baseball or the union, did they come to you guys and warn you this might be happening? I remember the rumors of it.
We did not get a heads up that we might be affecting draft picks.
Has it made the top 100 prospect list even more stressful?
No, because the thing I'll say about that is the thing I can say with all of this is our process is our process. And that's not going to change from this, right? Like the fact that this has real world ramifications couldn't make us care more about having the best list we can, because it already was incredibly like enjoyable, but also stressful process of getting there, right? Because it is one of those things where, I mean, does it mean a little bit from the standpoint of like, we've always known, we try to like, so again, when I talk about our process, we will have everyone who's involved in the prospect side put together like a prelim 150 each, which allows for different people perceive prospects differently, right? I may not be a Nolan Chanuel like believer. We have others who are, like, just to give an example of a guy who's in the big leagues at the end of last year, right? So that allows for the fact that it kind of evens out those differences in preferences and all that. And then we'll get together and then we'll put together a top 100 out of that. And when we get that 100, then we will go out and we will solicit feedback from people inside the industry who we've had long relationships with, you know, and trust, right? But we also know, like we knew before, but we also even know more now, right? Like being 98 on this list, as you say, like does have an impact. Well, but that's kind of part of the job. That was always already part of the job, right? Like, if you get feedback from someone and it's like, I think that you're really light on so-and-so, and I think you're really, you know, overblown on so-and-so, like you do run that through like an analyzer, right? Like, you know, that's something, one of the things I've told people kind of pretty regularly, like when they come and join Baseball America, is it's like one of the tough parts of this is I promise you at some point you're going to be writing up a prospect and you're going to be staring at your notes, and your notes are going to have notes from someone who's some professional who's quite good at this, who says this guy's breaking ball is a disaster and he should just shelve it and got to find something else. And then you'll scroll to another note from someone else who's very good at this, and that will say, I really love that slide, that breaking ball, that slider. You know, I think it's really got promise. It needs to be a little more consistent with it, but that's going to be that pitcher's best pitch. And then you've got to sit there and go, this source said 2 + 2 = 6. This source said 4 + 4 = 22. And I've got to decide, how do I fuse that? And it's not a split the middle thing, right? Like, so then often that means kind of like, hey, I need to go get more information on that, right? Or, and again, we're not scouts. We're not pretending that we are. But at the same time, a whole lot of people who've gone from PA have gone straight to scouting. So I'm not going to say the same thing of like that. Like John Manuel, one of my best friends who was in this job before me, he's a twin scout now, right? Like, it's not like I've told our staff also, do use your eyes. Like, don't like say like, oh, I can't, you know, like we go to games, we watch a lot of video and all that. But with all of it, the best way I can put it is that it's not, it should not change how we do this. I'm not like saying I'm thrilled that like that something that Alan Simpson et al. Came up with in 1990 is now the reason that, you know, two teams are going to have pick draft picks in 2024, but it does not change the process from our standpoint of like, hey, we want our 100. Like, the 100 is kind of like, we now do, obviously we update it all through the year, but when someone says so-and-so is a top 100 prospect, I'll be completely above board about it. When we talk about that, that's the January list that we put out, because we can work as hard, we can work. And I, there are times, again, I'm lucky enough to have my vocation is something that I would be doing if it wasn't, but we work really hard in season and out, but you can't have 100 in season that has the same level of reporting as you can in the off season. So the 100 is the culmination of, we've been gathering. So we're now right now, I think the A's top 10 is up today. We'll do, we have, I think that leaves us with four more to go. So by before Christmas, Baseball America subscribers will have updated top 10s with full scouting reports for all 30 MLB teams. And then, as we'd already talked about, we're finishing up having basically 40 guys written up for all 30 organizations by that are going in, that will be done by Christmas, but that will be going out to Baseball America Prospect Handbook purchasers in early January. Well, that's building, basically, that's the foundation. It keeps stacking on top of it. And then we're ready to say, okay, now let's figure out the top 100, because we should be, as a group, at the point of like, we're sitting on the most information that we could have to put together 100 right now. And so that's what leads to the 100. And then the season begins, things change. But during the season, again, we update it every month. We update it for graduation, all that. But during the season, you're trying to build a, you're trying to fix a car while it's going down the freeway, right? Because there's always a lag time. Like, and again, this is like, I really enjoy, you know, like my conversations I have with you guys and all, because I say this over and over, like, we, like, there are people watching this right now who, I promise you, and I say this with utter respect, have more information on some Tigers guys than I have as I'm sitting here finishing up the Baseball America top 30, top 40, really, right? Because now I may have some piece of information that that said person doesn't have, but I promise you, like, if you live in Erie, I'm trying to keep track of 120, throw in complex, 150, throw in the draft, 600, throw in high school, like throw in Japan, like the majors. Like, I wake up every day knowing every day during the season, sorry, this is a long monologue, but I know every day during the season that I have fallen further behind on what I want to know, right? And like, you know, like really, like we've had like conversations, like you've like DM me something like, hey, check this out. And I'm like, ooh, thanks. I'm going to go look at this. Because like Ty Madden a couple of years ago, like, and again, Ty Madden, I think, changed spine tilt a little bit again this year, late in the season. But Ty Madden, he was a guy who's always fascinated me. I remember, like, right. I root for all prospects to succeed, really. Like, I don't have personal, like, I love this guy, I hate this guy. It may seem like that because we try to write them honestly. But Ty Madden was a guy who, like, I thought the way he went in the draft was a little bit short-sighted, because I felt it was like, it was all about, oh, his fastball characteristics aren't perfect, therefore we don't want him, And I think that there are some organizations like, nope, fastball like that. It's dead zone fastball. Nope, I'm out. And then Ty Madden went out on his own and then with a little help for the Tigers. But really, like even before that, it's like, okay, I can improve that. But by the way, I also have the ability to pitch. I also have the ability to carry velo deep in the games. I have all this. So like I was going to watch those first Ty Madden starts of that year right away, like because I'd seen a lot of Ty Madden in Texas. I think I made a prediction. I thought he was going to be better than half of the starting pitchers. Half of the pitchers were taken in the first round that year, all that. And then you see Ty Madden and you're like, that's different. And then you like start, you know, calling and like getting information on it. And it's like, but that's something where it's like, again, that's the idea of you're jumping on a moving truck that's flying down the road. Because while I'm looking at that, there's only so many hours in the day. And like Wenzel Perez, like I think Wenzel Perez may end up being a better center fielder than infielder. And I just kind of came to that point. Like if you'd have asked me about that a month and a half ago, I'd have been like, I don't have any insight on that at all. Like that's the fun part about this is every day that you wake up, I want to know more. That's what makes this so fun is every day. And the thing that makes it also for someone with my personality utterly challenging is, and every day I go to bed knowing if I had more time, like every one of these Tigers that we're talking about, if I had more time, I'd know them more, right? Like in an ideal world, I would watch multiple starts for every one of these pitchers. In an ideal world, I would basically watch 50 swings in addition to talking to people that I'm not. But you just add it up. Like again, I'm writing 80 reports this week. And if you say 30 minutes per player, okay, well, we're at 40 hours then before I start writing. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to, some of these, like I got this guy, right? Like, or I've got enough notes. I didn't watch a whole lot of Isaac Pacheco because I had enough notes on, and I've written up Isaac Pacheco for a number of years where I feel like, okay, where it's like, okay, I'm going to bear down more on, you know, I don't know much about Max Anderson before I started this process. So I'm going to bear down more on him. I'm sorry. That was a long monologue, but I hope that gives something into kind of how we try to approach this.
Yeah. And the reason why I don't mind sending you these things, because we're on the road constantly and, you know, I'm not gonna lie, wouldn't mind having to be able to contribute to the website because you guys do such great work and we have really good relationships. And again, we know how stressful it is, especially when it comes to prospect reports. I mean, we've been making inroads. We've been getting some more people who have been more friendly to us. For example, actually tomorrow we're going to talk to Ryan Garko. It blew it for everybody, but whatever, it's fine.
I will be on checking that out too. Have that in the background as I'm writing, because that's always useful.
Yeah. And one of the things with Ryan, with that in mind is that the reason why we do this and the clips, and everybody always kind of complains about the clips sometimes on Twitter, but Chris and I have talked about this. There's a number of times where we just go back into the Twitter media library and go, all right, well, he was able to get Justice Bigby's home runs, and then we just put it on our channel, and we just use it as a resource, not only for ourselves, but for others, because I think it's important, especially when you see the inroads. Like, I think that, you know, I don't mind giving intel to people because I love doing this. I mean, I wish I got paid to do this more, or paid at all, but I love doing this.
The lament of this industry, and again, I'm one of the pure, total lucky ones. Absolutely, you know, but this is an industry that at the same time is brutal that way because but the thing about it is like because we all love it so much, that's why this can both happen, but also means like where it's absolutely like there are fields out there that are very well paid. Partly because you have to find people willing to do it. And the dirty secret of the baseball industry is this. There's so many people who want to do it. So many, you know, that it does create. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. Go ahead, Chris. What were you
going to
say?
No, you're absolutely right. Like, and that's the thing. There are more people willing to do it than there are jobs. No, the only thing I wanted to say, and not to say you weren't like downing yourself by any means, right? It's just there's just too much work for you to be able to go in depth on everybody. But I think that provides a very valuable resource to people like us who we're drilling down on one team, and we don't know how Colt Keith compares to somebody from another organization because we're not watching him. And so I think it's a terrific resource. I love everything that Baseball America does. I was going to ask you for another SS thing, but I don't want to, take too much time. It was just, I think.
Let's do one more. I love talking process. And by the way, I did want to interrupt to say, Richard Felke, you are 100% right. I always have a problem saying like, but when I am on, fatigue from staying up too late every night, it becomes even way more. So yes. So like, I'm shouting out that because I do apologize and say, you are 100% right. My wife has told me 1,000 times, like, do you know how often you say like when you're tired? I'm like, I like to say like when I'm tired.
I'll be honest, I didn't notice.
By the way, Stan, $9.99, by the way, Stan.
Exquisite.
There you go. There's Dan Hasty doing his golf announcing from the West Michigan game this year. Now, my only other question is I think, just looking, we just did our list too, and looking at it, I think we tend to be slightly more conservative. And what I mean by that is that I think we had Max Clark third. We had Colt Keith, Jackson Jobe, Max Clark. And then we have Sawyer Gibson Long and Keider Montero just ahead of Ty Madden. And I think what we do, maybe unknowingly, because we do a similar process where we have four different people throw together lists, is I think we just kind of give boosts to guys who have shown it at higher levels. And so I guess my only process question is if you have a philosophy on kind of ceiling versus floor when you're doing rankings, because it's sometimes tough for me to say, I know all these scouting reports on Max Clark. I just haven't seen it enough. So I don't know how to do that.
Yeah, and it's the same thing with, like, for example, we don't get a lot of film on Lakeland, and anytime we do, we also know this year the Florida State League, pitching wise, was kind of down comparatively speaking to what it was before. So trying to take that or factor that into consideration, especially for a guy like Melton, who was most dominant pitcher in Lakeland, comes up to West Michigan, and to see that adjustment there before he got shut down for the year. That's where I same thing, because sometimes I go, okay, well, Keith's done it at all levels. I'm going to make him still my number one prospect. However, with Max Clark, I've only seen a limited sample. And sometimes I get in my mindset to going, okay, I can't always think, have I seen him? Have I seen him enough? And that's where I get, and that's where in my process, sometimes I get stuck with.
Right. Okay. So two things with that. One is that is where, again, I will say, like, I just described this thing and how crazy it is. And at the same time, I also know, like, I'm fortunate enough to work at Baseball America, where we have a team of, like 10 of us who are trying to do this. And there's a lot of people I respect out there who are doing the, like the totality of it. And they're doing it with one, two people, where, like, everything I just said, like, multiply it. Like, this is the challenge of the big. But, like, to go back to what you're saying, like, okay, I'll start with the kind of, Chris, like, your, like, ceiling floor, right? So this is I think it's a good analogy. It's not like a perfect, like we always do it this way. But one of the things that does stand out, as I see it, is when you talk about trades, when you talk about what teams are looking to do, right? Our 100 is not a trade value chart. Our 30s are not a trade value chart. But at the same time, they should be, like, you should not see. If two players in the 100 are traded, the number one prospect should not be traded for the number 99 prospect straight up. That would then seem to indicate that we miss either we or, again, if it's 50 years ago, we could say maybe some organization, but all organizations have a pretty good idea at this point. That would then seem to indicate that we missed something really badly, right? If you saw, like, now you may see the number four prospect in one organization traded from the number 12 prospect in the other, and you go, wow, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Then you look at it and go, actually, by the BA grade, they're both 50 highs. Okay, it makes a lot of sense. It's just that this org's better than this org or whatever. But when it comes to ceiling versus floor, to take like a Sawyer Gibson Long example, right? I'm a little bit of a skeptic still. Great September. It's also true that September was better than he's been. I know he had a couple of starts like that, but like he was getting shelled a couple of times in Toledo in relief role right before he came up and was four starts in a row, five innings, 11 Ks in one of them, really good every time out, right? And maybe he found another gear, or, you know, maybe that was him at his peak, and then there's a little bit below it. But the thing that stands out with that is, it's like, if we're talking about a guy like him, and say, let's compare him to a Ty Madden, right? I would say, if the Tigers were looking to trade a pitcher, they're not, but let's say they were, you would say, okay, I'll give you Gibson Long, or I'll give you Madden. I think the other team would take Madden 10 times out of 10. And the reason I would say that is that, not that Gibson Long hasn't done more so far than Madden, but it'd be like, okay, this guy has a chance to be this, whereas I think this guy is going to be more of this. And we value this more than that. We're willing to accept more of the risk. That's not always true with this, but at the same time, I would say that if you look at just kind of like the distribution of players, right? Like a Max Clark, we don't know. Now, this leads in the second part. The advantage we have is that we should have on this is that we're also covering them from sophomores in high school through to the major leagues. So like a player like Max Clark, like you said, like, yeah, there is very little pro info, video, insights or whatever to be gleaned yet. But where we're going to start with on Clark is, I've been fortunate enough to see Clark myself in person for multiple years. Carlos from our staff and Ben Madler have seen him, you know, like way more than I have. But like, we were talking about Max Clark and how good he was compared to the Tamar Johnson, Elijah Green, you know, Jackson Holiday class. We were seeing him be one of the best hitters on the summer showcase circuit that summer, right? So like, I remember, right, like doing like a piece like, hey, if you look at it when it comes to contact rate, when it comes to hard hit rate, batting average, on base slugging in these top level competitions, he was as good as any of them in that class when he was a rising junior. So we've kind of had a pretty long track record of Max Clark could be really good. But to go back to now, kind of, again, I'm tired. But so the segue to the distribution of it. Okay. Let's say like with a Jace Young, right? Or like a guy like that. If we kind of lay him out, like describe him, let's say he's got a good chance to be a 50-55 type player, right? A good regular, a reasonable, not best case, but a reasonable optimistic scenario is he's an above average regular at a useful position. Although he's probably, I know he won the Gold Glove, but let's just say he's an average defender at a second or third who can hit, you know, a good, very good player. Okay. Now that's really valuable. But if Max Clark is what he could be a seven, right? We may not be there. We could be utterly wrong on that. However, if he is a seven, if he is a center fielder who hits for average and power and is basically, let's just say, a grade below Parker Meadows in center, let's just say. Well, Jace Young probably has a solid shot. I don't want to say for any minor leaguer they've got a great shot, but a solid shot to be like, let's just say, like a three war player, right? And which, by the way, as we just said, with the Tigers would be like, celebrate, let's do a party. You know, like, but a 2-3 war player, and you said, like, well, what if it really, like, he does everything right? It's like, okay, well, he could be a 4 war player if the defense is better, we're thinking, if the power develops more or whatever, right? If you said with Max Clark to me, like, what could Max Clark be? Like, now, he absolutely has an off-ramp where it's like, this is a high school kid who just got into pro ball, who has many steps down the road to get to the majors. Jace Young has already cleared many of those steps, already did it in college. There are so many things that he's checkboxes that Jace Young has already cleared. But if Max Clark is what I described before, that's a 5+ WAR player. That's a 6 WAR player. And how we do it, like we are a star over depth, like when we do talent rankings and all that. The reason being is that, and we see this with free agency a lot, right? Like when we're talking about the Ohtani, we're talking about Yamamoto, we're talking about, you know, Juan Soto being traded. It is way easier to find a way to add a couple of 2-3 WAR players those are available at times, right? Like Nick Castellanos is a regularly, I would say, a two to three war player. And that guy's now like, you know, he's thought had a very good career and all, but he's kind of bounced around, right? The guy, it is really hard to acquire a five war player, someone who does that regularly, because they're so rare. And if someone has them, they really hold on to them, unless it's like, you're going to give us a mint for them, or you're the Red Sox and say, we're going to trade Mookie Betts. And I don't know why, but so that's where we kind of line up on this is like, if we're going to miss, I am okay. We're going to miss sometimes, but I'm okay with missing on, these are the guys, these are the players who are potentially exceptional, because the potentially exceptional players, again, we're not on, I don't want to make it sound like we miss on these, but like, to go back a few years ago when there was the year, it was like, okay, do you like Ronald Acuna or Shohei Ohtani? And we're like, yes. Like, yes.
Yes.
And it's like, but you say, well, why are those guys so much beyond like the guys who are 15 on that list? You know, why are these guys 1 and 2? It's like, because these are the guys that, again, one player can't do it on any major league team. We've seen that. Mike Trout waves his hand and goes, I've tried. I really did. Yeah. But Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani together can't do it. But if you have a player like that, you have the foundation of being, you know, Corey Seager was the found in Corey Seager, the Rangers adding Corey Seager and Marcus Semien, who are both 5+ war players in a really good year, and then getting Evan Carter to come up and, by the way, play like a 5 war player over the final month of the season. And you say, well, how did the Rangers win the World Series? Because they had stars being stars. And if you said, how does teams get to being the best teams in baseball? You need depth and you need stars. But it's really hard for me to come up with the example of a team that wins 100 games, that wins a World Series, and you say, well, who's their best player? And it's like, well, they got a lot of 3 to 4 war players. That's a great thing to have. Yeah. But I do feel like at the end of the day, and the reason that the biggest trade packages always go for this are, if you have a true star, if that's the thing that kind of changes a team. Again, I also get long-winded when I'm tired, so I apologize for it. But I hope that explains terrific. It a little bit.
No,
fantastic. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I think about, you know, you're mentioning this. I think about those Dodger teams that Chris and I were talking about this yesterday. That won 4 rookies of the year in a row in the '90s, and they were a bunch of 3 or 4 war players, but they didn't. They had a hard time competing.
They traded away the best of them. They had a 7-8 war pitcher, and it's like, oh, we want Delino DeShields for Pedro Martinez.
Like, all right, I always say, I even think about those 80s Yankees teams too, like Doug Drayback, all these prospects the Yankees had at one point that would have probably put them over at one
Jay Buhner.
Point. Jay Buhner.
I just always make me think of Frank Costanza.
Yeah, but as far as that goes, no, it's good to have this explanation to us, because it to me, it also helps with, for example, we got some flack that Max Anderson wasn't higher on our list. I haven't seen enough of Max Anderson, but I know that he was the Big Ten hitter, Big Ten, and only seen him maybe against Michigan State or Michigan, but I don't have enough to merit, okay, well, he's hip for power, but it's very difficult to even to make that transition, comparatively speaking, to kind of like what Isaac Pacheco was going through in West Michigan, because they're two different type of players. What are you going to say, Chris?
Oh, no, nothing. Just, I mean, you know, criticism about where guys land on lists doesn't really, I don't care, because we update the lists, right? And like, it's just a snapshot in time, right? Like, 6 weeks into the season, Max Anderson might look like, a future plus hitter or something. Like, okay, all right, we'll move him up.
Where does Peyton Graham look right now? Speaking of Big Ten, where does Peyton Graham look now compared to where he looked a year ago? Like, it changes.
Yeah.
And so,
the risk, the criticism, it's going to come no matter what, I guess. When you do a ranking, that's part of what it's for, is just to try to get a snapshot. But
yeah. But the, by the way, we did want to ask one last total non-baseball question, and Chris and I were talking about this yesterday, was the death of I watched more Andre Bauer. Yeah, Andre Bauer. I watched him more on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Not because Homicide was on.
Homicide would have been a little bit before, you know, like, am I right? Like,
yeah, well, Homicide was on, but I was more into, I think at the time it was in my wheelhouse. I think it was in high school, but it was like the late 90s, but I was watching.
Homicide was a little before that because The Wire was by the, like, I always think of it like I'm also a Wire guy. And
oh, so are we,
Homicide,
yeah.
Homicide. Basically, Homicide plus The Corner begats The Wire, right?
Yeah.
Like, basically, I think it's like a little bit before that. Like, I want to say the Homicide started in the late, like 90, like maybe. I'm going to look it up.
It was like 93. So it started in 93. And when it was on the bulk of it at the time, I remember it's the only time I ever watched NBC, because I thought it was, for whatever reason, I thought it was on ABC, but the only time I ever watched NBC was on Thursday nights, and for, at the time, either Night Court, which was just coming to an end, or Quantum Leap. So, yeah, that's what my priorities were. Yeah. So Homicide was a little too serious for me at that time until later, but I thought, again, it was just a really, just caught us off guard. It was the same thing earlier this year with the death of Lance
Reddick.
Yeah, Lance Reddick,
who's speaking of The Wire.
Yeah.
I posted things about, because like I was a Homicide fan, although not like, again, I can't recite episodes from that like I can with The Wire. The Wire is much easier to rewatch. And so like, if we could have a fun debate about like which season, and okay, if we just accept that season 4 is the best, you know, like that the kids is the best, but what's the next best? And we could have a lot of fun. I can't do that with Homicide, but Brooklyn Nine-Nine, like that was a gift to get this classically trained dramatic actor who could turn that on at a moment's notice whenever they wanted. Like, you had in your toolbox at Brooklyn Nine-Nine, anytime you needed to add a little gravitas to an episode, which they did at times, don't worry, we've got Raymond Holt here. We've got this actor who can utterly pull that off. But the fact that he also fit in on what was really, like, again, in a great way, like, was part of that, like, that family of kind of office drama type, Parks and Rec, Office, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you know, like that, where you had this, the Greg Daniels, Mike Schur, like, family of comedies, where he fit in and didn't seem like he was standing out as, like, why is he in this? The fact that he was just as goofy, you know, the fact that he could drop, like, he was the straight man, but that he could also sometimes drop a line where all of a sudden you're like, okay, that was the best line in the show. It's not Andy Samberg's. It's not, you know, take your pick. It was, you know, it was his. And that's, yeah, I mean, it kind of, my daughter and I were talking about it today because she was a Brooklyn Nine-Nine fan. And we're like, God, you know, 61.
He steals scenes all the time, too. That was exactly right. So for anybody that wants to sign up, right now, go to baseballamerica.com, sign up. I have the digital subscription in addition to getting the magazine. It is worth the money, and it is a fantastic resource for anybody. Again, we have a lot of prospect fans that come to us for that, but if you want to go to Baseball America, it is a bench standard for that. So I put the link in our YouTube chat, and I'll put the link in our description on the podcast. JJ, as always, thank you for your time, more than your time with this. I know you're, again, burning the midnight oil. I did not realize. But if you ever need us to jump in and help out.
I was looking forward to this. Though. This was something that, like, this gives me this is my little palate cleanser for the day. I finished the Tigers. I need to write the Twins. But this gave me a great little way to kind of have something really enjoyable in between. Thank you all. Thanks, everyone. Comments, too. Like, again, it's like, but if you, you know, I say this again, the way that I will kind of wrap it up on my end is this, again, thank you guys. I enjoy, you know, again, I always enjoy talking to you all, but also thank you. I know, like, I am one of the lucky, I was at the winter meetings last week, And there was a friend of mine, Trent Rosecrans, who's the Reds beat writer for The Athletic. Well, I first met Trent. I was just finishing up my, I think I just finished up my college career at UGA. And Trent was just starting his college career at UGA. But I was covering the UGA beat for my paper I was working for at the time, you know, back when newspapers had sports writers, you know, regularly and all that. And seeing him again, we're like, I was able to say to him, like, but it's overall, it's like, I just laid it out. And I know that there may have sounded like, I would please understand, there's no complaining coming from me on this, that this is how we do it. Because this, the challenge for me is, this is so fun. It's never going to stop being fun, I hope. Like, this has not changed being, you can never master this, right? Like, I've been at BA for 21 years, and things I knew for sure in 2002 are not true now. And things that I did that I thought was sure were not true in 2002 have been proven true. But I'm going to sure there's some, many more things on that. You can't ever get to the understanding of this. So that's the fun part of it. So thank you guys. And I do need to run. Yeah. Someone's at my door. Yeah. So thank you guys.
Thanks so much, JJ.
See ya.
We'll see you soon.
All right. Wow. Well, that was more than I anticipated. So I know, Chris, you got to go too, right?
Good point. Super generous with this time. Yeah, I got to go pick up my son from school. But we didn't even talk about airplanes, helicopters. Yeah. I probably should send him a video of my neighbor's helicopter. But
You should. Yeah, dude, he would love that, man.
That was awesome. JJ's a really great guy and very thoughtful and very informative. And so, yeah, we appreciate his time and thank him very much. And thanks to anybody who watched.
Yeah. Thank you for taking your time out this afternoon to join us. So tomorrow we're going to have, spoiler alert, we're going to have Ryan Garko, but that's going to be recorded. It's not going to be live.
Yeah, none of you jokers can ask him questions.
Yeah. So if you have some questions for Ryan Garko, please leave them. If you're on our Discord or you shoot me a text, just let me know. I know some people may have my personal number. So if you have a text for Ryan Garko, the VP of player personnel for the Tigers, we'll be talking to him tomorrow. And we'll be putting that podcast out immediately afterwards. So, but again, thank you to JJ for his time and consideration. And we'll be doing a top 30 prospect probably this weekend. We'll probably break down a top 30 where we just revamped the site. The Jose Briseño report is up on our website right now. So go to TigersMLReport.com. And again, if you want to donate, again, we're going to be setting up a GoFundMe. Somebody's helping us set up a GoFundMe for the year. So our goal is to raise as much money as possible to travel to Lakeland and the nuances with all that. So thanks, guys. You guys are awesome. I appreciate everybody, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon. Have a good afternoon.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.